ॐ जननीं शारदां देवीं रामकृष्णं जगद्गुरुं पादपद्मेतयोः श्रित्वा प्रणमामि मुहुर्मुहुः। ॐ सदाशिवसमारम्भां शङ्कराचार्यमध्यमाम् अस्मदाचार्यपर्यन्तां वन्दे गुरुपरम्पराम्। शङ्करं शङ्कराचार्यं केशवं बादरायणं सूत्रभाष्यकृतौ वन्दे भगवन्तौ पुनः पुनः। ईश्वरो गुरुरात्मेति मूर्तिभेदविभागिने व्योमवद्व्याप्तदेहाय दक्षिणामूर्तये नमः। इन् दि कण्टेक्स्ट् आफ् डिस्कसिङ्ग् दि भजगोविन्दं वि आर् डिस्कसिङ्ग् दि लैफ् आफ् दि आथर् आफ् भजगोविन्दं हू कुड् बि मोर् अथरैज्ड् टु कम्पोस् दिस् मार्वलस् हिम् विच् इस् अप्लिकबल् एव्री मिनिट् आफ् अवर् लैफ् टु आल् आफ् अस्. So, in our last class, we have been seeing how everyone requires a teacher. And Shankaracharya, when he was 6 or 7 years old, for the Indian biographies are very scanty and not reliable at all. Shankaracharya went in search of a guru, and a guru is ever ready. A guru is nothing but the grace of God. When the disciple is ready, when the student is ready, when the field is ready, then the seed will come, the teacher will come, the guidance will come. Shankaracharya, it was said, he roamed on the banks of Narmada. At last he found his guru, who is very wonderfully called Govindacharya. And he stayed with his guru in a cave and learnt all the scriptures under him. It is said that scriptures which are not learnt under a person who knows what he is talking, and he talks only with authority, and authority comes only with realization. So this Govinda Bhagavatpada was such a personality, and Shankaracharya was an apt recipient. So Govinda taught Shankaracharya, who already knew the spirit of the Vedas, spirit of the Upanishads, Prasthanatraya. He was a child prodigy, but the interpretation came from the mouth of a realized soul. Then the guru had the ability to teach, but for some reason he himself did not write commentaries, and that's what he commanded his disciple Shankaracharya. You are an apt student, please write commentaries. And Shankaracharya took leave of his guru, went to Varanasi. And by that time, Shankaracharya himself was recognized as a not only a child, a prodigy, a genius, but a most spiritual personality. So we now find Shankara in Varanasi, surrounded by some disciples who came to him at various times. His time was occupied in three things. Shankaracharya started training his disciples in the scriptures. Later on we find he founded 4 mathas in the 4 corners of India, and each one of his disciples was handed over one matha. Shankaracharya was a great genius. He was a very smart person, what we call smartness. So he understood, however great a Vedantin, if 2 Indians come together, there will be, as they say, when 2 Jews are living together, there would be 3 synagogues. Why 3? Because 1, so that they can go to each one of their favorite synagogue, and 3rd, about which they could say, I refuse to put my foot in that synagogue. Hindus are like that. So many temples are there even now. How much money is being wasted in constructing so many temples, while so many temples are just in a great dilapidated condition. At one time they were very popular, lot of worshippers were attracted, but now it is not so. So, the first task of Shankaracharya is to spread the spirit of the Vedanta. For that he started training his disciples. And he knew the Indian mentality of non-cooperation. That's why only one disciple was given the charge of each of the four mathas, and he divided whole of India into four quarters, and every disciple has the authority to spread Vedanta only in that particular quarter, so they will have no occasion to dispute, to quarrel, to become jealous, etc. We know the Indian religious history. Anyway, that was the first task. Second, many spiritually thirsty people used to come to Shankaracharya. Naturally, as Sri Ramakrishna used to say, when a fragrant flower starts blossoming, it need not send any online invitation. The bees somehow come to know and they come of themselves. So that was the second task. Anytime anybody comes, Shankaracharya was a great compassionate soul. He would, even night also, he was ready to instruct if he could help, like Buddha, like Sri Ramakrishna, like Shankaracharya. So that was the second task. Third was the most important task. However many disciples he might train, however much he may help, he wanted to lay a very strong foundation to the Advaita Vedanta. For that he required to write commentaries. This is called a bhashya. A bhashya is an elaborate explanation of every single word. There are certain rules. One of the cardinal rules is you cannot construct a sentence according to your wish, but you will have to explain the words as they occur in the original Shruti or Smriti. Later on you can sum up, but that is the one of the cardinal rules of writing a bhashyam, a commentary, and there should be no doubt at all. So a bhashyam contains minimum three rules. First, every word, and in that particular order that it occurs in the original, should be explained. Second, he must bring out the purport of that particular scriptural statement as clearly, as elaborately, and put it as simply so that others can understand long after the writer's passing away. But most important is to establish, to propagate a particular school of philosophy. He has to take into consideration all the objections raised by the opponents and refute them logically, not merely saying, this is what the scripture says, so I refuse to listen to you. So that is one of the greatest problems Indians face, Christians face, Muslims face. It is written in the scripture and I will interpret it as I like. That is leading not only to misunderstanding of the scripture, but to bloodshed, to the harm of so many people. So here is a bhashyakara has to refute them so logically that the opponent has no voice, because everybody has to keep his mouth shut. When it is logically proved, of course, we presume the opponents are really rational people, commonsensical people, ready to accept at least reason. So, every bhashya must contain these three minimum rules, and Shankaracharya had written elaborately the the foundations of Indian religion, Hindu religion, Vedanta, is three. They are called Prasthana Traya, the Upanishads, the Brahma Sutras, and the Bhagavad Gita. And on all the three, he has written beautiful commentaries. Of course, the Upanishads are many. He had chosen arbitrarily about 10 Upanishads, 11 really, 11 Upanishads, and he has written beautiful commentaries, but at the same time, his commentaries on two particular Upanishads, Chandogya and Brihadaranyaka, are incomparable. They are the biggest Upanishads, and at the same time, most elaborate, and I cannot describe in words how much they knew human psychology. I'm not talking about Shankara, I'm talking about the Upanishads. And they dealt with our psychology and the truth that as it is. Just I will give a small example which we studied in the Mundaka Upanishad. First, the Upanishad praises sky high, all the rituals, and said, Etat Satyam, everything written in the first part of the Vedas, which goes by the popular name Karma Kanda, is absolutely true. Whatever results are promised in the Vedas will absolutely come true. But after saying that, the Upanishad wants to draw our attention, these are but, however great the result, they are worldly result. World is ever changing. So the results in the world also will be ever changing. Those who ascend to heaven must fall down one day. So there is a higher truth. But like a child who will not keep quiet, and unless some lollipop is put into his mouth for some time, the child has to grow. The Upanishad presumes that some of us grow to the extent that we are able to understand. For them, the next statement is, there is the everlasting truth, and that is the you are none other than a child of God. Each soul is potentially divine. Everybody is Amrutasya Putra. That truth is told, what is called in the background, unmanifestedly until this time. Now it openly declares and says, give up all these things. This teaching is not given to everybody. It is given only to those grown-up people who have experienced the world, understood the hollowness of the world, and they came to that state of the consciousness where it says, we don't need it. Not that I give up reluctantly, but I have seen it thoroughly. I don't need it. For such people who are looking for some higher ideal, this teaching is given. There is no contradiction. There is no negation in the Upanishads. Everything is very positive. That's what we get in the commentaries. So, Shankaracharya had chosen 10 Upanishads, 11 Upanishads, including Shvetashvatara, and in that 11 Upanishads, he has given most elaborate commentary in the Brihadaranyaka as well as the Chandogya. Both are very voluminous books. So, Prasthanatraya. Then, as I mentioned earlier, Shankaracharya had composed, he was one of the greatest devotees of the Divine Mother. He knew his own life was granted. Miracles existed. He praised Lakshmi Devi and made her rain down golden marbleums. So, he also knows there are the Divine Mother is ruling the world. Without her grace, it is impossible. He had composed such exquisite hymns. Even today, just now we heard M.S. Subbalakshmi singing this Bhaja Govindam so melodiously. Hundreds of singers will sing, but this is one of my most favorite. Of course, you can have your own favorite. Hymns, stotras, and on all the gods and goddesses, including the sun, etc. Then, every morning, we have to get up with a prayerful mood, and we have to get up with a positive mood. for that Pratasmarana Stotras are there, both dualistic as well as non-dualistic. Pratasmarana Stotram is non-dualistic, but early morning to Lord Narayana, Meenakshi Panchakam, etc. This is the second type of works composed by Shankaracharya. And the third type of works, which are called Prakarana Granthas, that is, Shankaracharya takes from Advaita Vedanta some specific ideas and elaborates them exclusively. One example is Dridrishya Viveka, the discrimination between the seer and the seen. So this Dridrishya Viveka, it is exclusively focused upon the distinction between the seer and the seen so marvelously, but every Prakarana Grantha, every Stotra, every Bhashyam has only one ultimate goal, how to make man realize that he is not a man, he is not an individual, he is Brahman. So he started writing. But one thing we have to remember here, these great souls, they do never claim that I am writing. But he says, my guru commanded me, he gave me the power and he has given the talent and I am just a mere instrument. Whether a devotee is a bhakta or he is a jnani, it doesn't matter what. But they all claim that the inspiration is coming only from God. That is the most wonderful thing all over the world, not only in Hinduism, everywhere. So, but of all the things, Shankaracharya's commentary, Bhashyam, on especially Bhagavad Gita, is so profound and practical and humorous that even today it is studied for itself in dealing with day-to-day problems. I'll give a small example because I may not get suddenly some ideas come into my brain, so I will share with you. In second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, which is called Sankhya Yoga, Jnana Yoga, 16th chapter, there is this verse, Nasato Vidyate Bhavo, Na Bhavo Vidyate Sataha. So this is how it starts. And those who are wise people, Ubhayorapi Drishtantastu Nuhu. So wise people know all these things. One meaning is that whatever exists is, and it can never become non-existent. And whatever is mithya, changing, that always is changing, that is mithya, you don't need to bother about it. Now, what is the greatness in this particular? Shankaracharya interprets, and modern psychologists interpret it without knowing. Especially there is a book, How to Stop Worrying and Start Living. Then, how to stop worrying? Then, Dale Carnegie, in this book, he says, he states a marvelous, remarkable insight. He says, first of all, 99% of what we worry, something bad, something negative is going to happen, is never going to happen statistically. It is not possible. Secondly, says, supposing something happens, what is to happen is going to happen, and what is not going to happen is not going to happen. So, if it is not going to happen, there is nothing to worry. If it is going to happen, what is the point of worrying? Find out some means, what is the best that can happen, or what is the worst that can happen. What is the worst? You can die. He says, you don't need to worry. I am putting it in my own words. Not these are not true. Dale Carnegie's own words. I am just summarizing in my own words. Say, supposing a person is worrying terribly and this is going to happen, or I may lose job, or what is the worst that can happen? Worst is that you will die. Supposing you die, then there are no problems at all, no worry clinic. So that is how you can be a little bit free from this habit of worrying. Actually, it is a habit. If it is a fact, you can't avoid it. But you developed into thinking in a negative way, everything. Like the Gauls used to think in Asterix, one day the sky is going to fall upon them. Accepting that, they never fear anything. So, if something happens, what is the best you can do? That's all. Whether you worry, you don't worry, you do your best. What is going to happen is going to happen. But statistically, what happens, very worst it happens, it is very rare for most of the people. That is what one great psychological help we can derive from the 16th chapter, that if something is changing or non-existent, don't worry about it. Because a non-existing thing is a non-existing thing. But if something is existing, it is going, nobody can bring about destruction. So, nasato vidyate bhavaha, that a non-existence, that means here in this case mithya, a temporary experience, is a temporary experience. It is not going to last forever. But if it is sataha, so sataha will never become abhava, that is, it will never, existence never will become non-existent. That means what? Whatever is to happen is going to happen. But if you change, you do your best, then surprisingly, many problems can be solved. These worries need not be there. Just to do your best, close your eyes and sleep. And all great people, that's what they do. I'm just giving how these beautiful verses in the Upanishads, etc., they are not only teaching us spiritual truths. Actually, they preach and they teach only one spiritual truth. There is only one single spiritual truth. What is it? God exists and you came from God. Your duty is to go back to God. That is the only single truth. Rest is purely psychological. How we can train our mind, how we can reduce our egotism, how we can reduce our selfishness, etc., and how we can become happier. If I have to summarize in modern language, what is the essence of all the scriptures, we will show you a way how you can become far more happier than what you are now. But it is not going to fall from the sky. You will have to learn how to be happy. It is a scientific study, and we know how happy people have achieved it, and we will tell you those methods, their proven methods, and you will have to accept them and move forward. Anyway, so Shankaracharya started composing at Varanasi, obeying the commandment of Guru, which is the commandment of God. In this connection, when Valmiki, who was an illiterate person, he was able to compose a beautiful poetic shloka, and he was himself shocked, and then he understood that God in the form of Brahma wanted to use him because of his purity, gifted him. Similarly, Tulasidasa, he was commanded by Rama to write this Tulasi Ramayana. There are so many stories, I am not going into them, but the point is, all these great souls are mere conduits. Only children think the water in the form of rain that falls on the roofs descends through the conduits, looking like a lion's face, elephant's face, etc. And children think that water is coming from the elephant's mouth, lion's mouth, not knowing all water comes only from the sky, sent by God, Jala Devata. This is the simple truth. So whether it is Shankaracharya, Sri Ramakrishna, Rama, Krishna, Buddha, Jesus, Vivekananda, Ramana Maharshi, it is that one pure consciousness called God. It is His will. He creates. He wants to maintain this world. And He sends these beautiful ideas in this form. And that is why Shankaracharya never ever says, I have composed it. He uses sometimes, I am going to comment. But it means it is my Guru's commandment, it is His grace, Guru's grace, that made this work possible. So, he started writing. When he was at Varanasi. Why Varanasi? Because Varanasi is the most sacred, most city in the whole world. Of course, anybody can refute it, but I am talking from the viewpoint of scriptures and faith. Sri Ramakrishna himself certified, those who are fortunate to give up their body here, they are going to attain liberation without much effort. The only thing they have to make sure is that they will not stir from this Varanasi. They make sure that they give up this body falls in this particular area called Varanasi. That's all. So, certain events had taken place in Varanasi. So, what happened? One day, he was walking in a narrow path. So, here is very important, significant incident happened in the life of Shankara, in the life of Vivekananda, in the life of many, many people like that. So, this incident is called encounter with an outcast. When we have studied Manisha Panchakam, we have narrated that story. So, one day, and Shankaracharya was walking with some of his disciples on a narrow path. A low caste man with four dogs is supposed to have been coming from the opposite side. Either Shankara had to get out or the other person had to get out. So Shankaracharya's natural born impulse had come out and said, Dooram Apasarare Chandala. And that Chandala, unfortunately for Shankaracharya, happens to be Brahman, who knows Aham Brahmasmi. And then such a person can be taken as Shiva himself to teach him a lesson. So, what is the lesson Shankaracharya was taught here? So, those who are born in an upper caste feel superior instinctively and look down on those of the lower caste. One who takes to the life of a monk, a sannyasa, that is the first rule is, look upon everybody as God. Sarvam Brahmamayam. Everything is nothing but Brahman. As Sadashiva Brahmendra so beautifully sings in his Sanskrit bhajans, kirtans. Sarvam re re Brahmamayam. Khelati Brahmande Bhagavan. Khelati Brahmande. Paramatmoham Paramatmoham. Brahmaivaham, Aham Brahmasmi. This is the Kela, this is the Leela of Bhagavan. So, a person who takes to sannyasa, he might not have realized the truth, but he must endeavor to realize the truth. He must learn how to look upon everybody, that they are not really bodies, they are the Atman. Unfortunately, for Shankaracharya, his Brahmin superiorism has come to the fore. And then instinctively, without thinking, like Swami Vivekananda, Dooram Apasarare Chandala, you get away from my path. That means I don't want it to breathe even the air that you have breathed. Probably Shankaracharya was suffering from corona at that time. You should have put on a mask. Anyway, so the Chandala addresses him, whom are you addressing? If you are thinking about me as the body, there is absolutely your blood, my blood, there is no difference at all. If you are thinking of the Atman, there is only one Atman, there is no my Atma, your Atma. Now, sir, tell me, whom are you addressing? If you are a Brahmagnani, there cannot be any second to address to. Shankara came to his senses, immediately composed a beautiful hymn, Manisha Panchakam, which we have dealt with. So, what is the point here? One who takes to the life of a monk is supposed to look upon all people as manifestations of Brahman and raise above all narrow feelings of caste, color and creed, language, local traditions, etc. Those who do not sincerely make an attempt to go beyond these restrictions are not worthy of being monks. Even today, after taking monastic vows, in many monasteries, many monks easily fall into this trap. Shankaracharya, though such a great soul, had to learn this lesson a hard way. So, the description goes here, Antya Vesha Dharam Drishtva Gaccha Gacheti Cha Abravit Shankaraha Sopi Chandalaha Tam Punah Praha Shankaram. Antya Vesha Dharam, donning the dress of a low caste person, drishtva, having seen such a person, gacha gacha, get away from my path. This is what Shankaracharya instinctively responded to that situation. So pichandalaha, that so-called low caste person, tam punah praha Shankaram, started addressing Shankaracharya. So he is asking, annamayat annamayam, athava chaitanyam eva chaitanyat. Yati vara, duri kartam vanchasikim bruhi gacha gacheti yati vara, o best among the monks, is a kind of fun. If you are really a yati, you would not have uttered such words. But you are dawning, but you have good possibilities, I will teach you. Duri kartam vanchasikim, what is it that you want to separate yourself? Because Brahman is infinite. You cannot separate anything from the infinite. So duri kartam vanchasi, you desire something to be away from you, your Brahman nature. Kim bruhi gacha gacheti, tell me now, are you talking about this flesh and blood, or are you talking about the pure consciousness? In both ways, you are not going to get it. Now, let us look at Sri Ramakrishna. From the very beginning, a heartfelt prayer came from the bottom of his longing, yearning heart. Oh mother, I am a fool. First thing he said, I am a fool. I don't know anything of the scriptures. You make me talk. You make me understand. You make me do what you want me to learn. And then the mother has taken a responsibility. And then as a part of that intuitive commandments, I must get rid of this feeling that I am born in a high caste family. For that he adopted, all our devotees know these things, but it is better to remind ourselves of this again and again and again. Because there are so many kinds of prides are there, varieties of prides are there. One is vayovrittha, I am senior to you in age. Another is jativrittha, I am born in upper caste than you. Another is vidyavrittha, I am more learned than you. Another is gunavrittha, I have got more wonderful qualities than you. Another is shila. Shila means good conduct. My conduct is far superior to your conduct. I am a senior in the department of the good conduct, shila vrittaha, and it brings on that pride, etc. So, dhana vrittaha. So, a person who has got lot of wealth, automatically he feels. Sri Ramakrishna gives graphic examples of these things in his gospel. So, how many varieties? Saundarya vrittaha, rupa vrittaha. A person is looking beautiful. What happened? How many celebrities have committed suicide? How many these great actors and actresses have become completely insane, and they have to be admitted in psychiatrist treatment, and how much money they are spending. And here is one of the greatest army chiefs. Today he crashed in a helicopter. Did he know about it? So we have to understand, anything can come to an end in the twinkling of an eye. Anything can happen to anybody, anywhere, any time, in any way. This is called practice of viveka. So, Sri Ramakrishna, see, first of all, when Hriday went to see him, why he was, my uncle is going into the secretly jungle, and what does he do there? He found, to his horror, Sri Ramakrishna had removed his cloths and his sacred thread, and in that order. And then asked for explanation by Hriday. Ramakrishna said, these cloths bring the idea, I am the male, I am the female, body idea. And the sacred thread reminds me, I am born in a upper caste, higher caste. Hriday, those who want to develop love for the Divine Mother should never cherish these things, because Divine Mother is universal mother. She is mother to everybody. There will be no difference between brothers and sisters. They are all born of the same mother. And every sannyasi must have that kind of feeling. Saint Francis used to address sister birds. brother wolf like that. So Sri Ramakrishna secretly used to go and clean the lavatories of the cleaners of lavatories, and secretly, because they would not allow otherwise, and do it with great conscientiousness, and dry them up with his long hair, and pray wholeheartedly, "Mother, may the feeling never come that I am superior in any way to these people." Such a great prayer has instinctively come. But those who attain Brahma Jnana, they will have to practice that Jnana again and again. And we know that Shankaracharya was a great person. But at the beginning, he too had the feeling of differentiation. So not that he did not know, but the Purva Janma samskaras which were fructifying before he became a knower, sometimes they instinctively come up and make us temporarily forget. So this is what has happened. We know that. Now, so what happened? Why did it take time to feel that everybody is Brahman? It is hard to recall, overcome the deep-rooted impressions of the long past. Even men of samadhi can become victims of the unconscious samskaras. So we have to be very, very, very humble and pray to God. We will never make such a mistake. And Shankaracharya is often compared to Swami Vivekananda, is often compared to Shankaracharya, Upper Shankaracharya. I do not accept this statement. Why? Because Swami Vivekananda is far superior to every of these acharyas, as far as we know at the present moment. Why? All the acharyas had very narrow ideas, whereas Swami Vivekananda came, the great Rishi had come to break down all the barriers between yoga and yoga, between religion and religion, between the sacred and the secular, which was expressed so superbly by Sister Nivedita in her introduction to the complete works of Swamiji. He said this: it is not that Hinduism would vanish, but it would have been very difficult. But for Swami Vivekananda, bringing out the cardinal principles of Hinduism and making it available in the simplest of language to anybody who wants to know about Hinduism. And he said, he is the greatest reconciler. Of course, Swamiji is nothing but Sri Ramakrishna's outer expression. So it was Sri Ramakrishna's ideas that Dvaita is necessary, Visishtadvaita is a necessary step, Advaita is of course the final. So this is what Sister Nivedita had said: there need be no conflict. Let each one follow sincerely what they want to, what they really sincerely believe in, and a natural development will take place. They need not fight anything. Very naturally, a child grows into an adult, adult into middle age into old age, etc. The natural spiritual development will take place. So we are recalling two incidents. Even Swami Vivekananda, at that time Narendranath, pestered Sri Ramakrishna for the experience of samadhi. Remember, when Sri Ramakrishna wanted to give it to him voluntarily at the beginning, Swami Vivekananda cried out, "What are you doing to me? I have my parents at home." And Sri Ramakrishna understood Swamiji was not ready, Narendra was not ready for it. And he waited for 4.5 years. What was Sri Ramakrishna doing? He was earnestly praying and molding Narendranath's life so he can convert him into the future Swami Vivekananda, the messenger of the divine message from the greatest avatara, Sri Ramakrishna Paramahamsa. So, the Swami Vivekananda had to become a Jagadguru. And a Jagadguru means what? That not that trampling down upon everybody's opinion. Jagadguru means his teaching must uplift anybody, wherever that person is, man or woman, learned or ignorant, and help him. Even a person who doesn't believe in God, he should help him, provided the man is sincere. Is it possible to progress in spiritual life without professing faith in God? Absolutely, it is possible. And there are so many people far superior to those who profess themselves as believers, who are bloodthirsty, who kill people mercilessly, all in the name of God, in the name of Scripture. Anyway, there are two incidents. So Narendranath had pestered Sri Ramakrishna until one day, towards the end of Sri Ramakrishna's life, Sri Ramakrishna bestowed upon him the experience of Nirvikalpa Samadhi. I do not remind our devotees about it. And he knows now. He is supposed to be a Brahmagnani. Soon after, Sri Ramakrishna passed away and Swami Vivekananda took to the life of a wandering monk. One day he was wandering. So two incidents were there. One, during his wandering days, Swami Vivekananda came across a low-caste man smoking. The great Swami felt like smoking and asked for the pipe. When the low-caste man told him that he was a low-caste man, Swami Vivekananda simply walked away. Only after going some distance, suddenly he remembered that he was a monk and supposed to rise above all caste prejudices, and then came back and shared the pipe with him. Similarly, when he was invited to watch a notch girl's dance at Khetri, he refused as it is against the monastic rule. But when he heard a soul-stirring song of the divine coming out from that woman, dancer woman, what was that song? Prabhu mere avaguna chitta na dharo samadarshi hai namati haro. At once, Swami Vivekananda came down and joyously, not with force, witnessed her performance. For in the eyes of a saint, nothing is secular, everything is sacred. And he blessed that woman. What is this? I am a man, I am a monk, this is a woman, this is a notch girl. That kind of divisions should go. Whereas, in contrast, just to see, Ramakrishna was one day coming from Calcutta to Dakshineswar and he saw a public woman waiting for customers. Immediately his vision was transformed. That mother Sita was waiting for the arrival of Rama. Just to see how wonderful these incidents are. So, at that time, that is one incident, and he composed Manisha Panchaka. Then another incident happened, which is closely related to our subject matter, Bhajagovindam. So, Bhajagovindam is one of the most beautiful hymns composed by Shankaracharya. But there is a story attached to the composition of this hymn. Acharya Shankara, it is said, was one day walking along a street in Varanasi, accompanied by his disciples. He heard the sound of grammatical rules being recited by an old man in the hope of becoming a scholar. It is said in those days that it takes 12 years to become an adept, a scholar, in Sanskrit grammar, which is the foundation for all the mastering of the, whether it is Vedantic scriptures or kavyas, that is, literature, Sanskrit literature, like compositions of Kalidasa, Banapatta, etc. So, this old man, that tremendous futile hope, and being an old man, memory is disturbed. So, like ABCD, ACDB, ABDC, he was trying to recite, remember, but unable to do it. And Shankaracharya saw this pitiable sight. And then immediately he composed, addressing that old man, out of tremendous compassion, this Bhajagovindam Stotram was composed. Shankaracharya was touched and moved with pity at the ignorance of the old man, who was wasting away the most precious time at that age for a mere intellectual accomplishment, instead of working for release from the bondage of the world. A hymn to Govinda was supposed to have been composed on this occasion. One thing we have to remember, whenever great souls like Shankaracharya compose something, it is not like the works of an ordinary poet who sits after having a first-class tea or coffee and sitting and musing and let their imagination run riot. These are spontaneous outpourings from the deepest layer for the good of humanity and flows by the grace of God. It is God who composes, because the knower of Brahman is none other than Brahman. So this particular stotram begins with these words. That is why it is called Bhajagovinda Stotram. Bhajagovindam, Bhajagovindam, Govindam, Bhaja, Mudhamate, Samprapte, Sannihite, Kale, Nahi, Nahi, Rakshati, Dukrum, Karane. Worship Govinda, worship Govinda, worship Govinda. O fool, rules of grammar will not save you at the time of your death. This English translation is very watered down version. So, worship Govinda. Why? Because you are a Mudhamati. You are a foolish fellow. You don't know next second what is going to come. Already 1 foot in the grave. Samprapte Sannihite Kale. Kala. In Sanskrit, Kala means death. So, when death approaches you near, it is not that it is approaching death. Every second, death is accompanying us. That's why many times I mentioned this, you have to remember. This great Shankaracharya says about death, there are two varieties of death. One is called invisible death, another is called visible death. When a person is dead, prana departs from that person. This is called visible death. Everybody can witness, oh, this person is dead, the body will now rot. It has to be cremated as soon as possible. But there is an invisible death. From the time conception takes place, the fetus is 1 hour old, 1 day old, 1 year old. Then you see, baby is 1 day old, but baby is not 1 day old. He is 9 months and 1 day old. Then he is, every single minute is approaching Ayur nashyati pashyatam pratidinam yati kshayam evanam pratyayantigataha punarna divasah kalo jagat bhakshaka lakshmihi toya taranga bhanga chapala vidyuchalam jivanam tasmat mam sharanagatam shambho tvam raksha rakshadhuna. This is the fact of life, which we discussed in the Yaksha Prashnas also. Ahanyahani bhutani gachanti yama mandiram Seshah Stavaram Ichchante Kimas Charyam Ataparam. So death can come. That is why I always say, never anybody asks you, simply you say, so far so good. I am okay so far. Simply you add so far, because next millisecond what is going to happen, nobody knows about it. So, Samprapte Sannihite Kale, when death approaches you, and most often it comes to you before you realize, without notice. It doesn't give a notice. Sannihite kale dukrum karne. Reciting the alphabet A, B, C, D, A, D, B, C, A, B, D, C. This is not going to save you from death. In fact, it will prolong another birth, another death. Nahi nahi rakshati. What is the way? Bhaja Govindam, Bhaja Govindam, Bhaja Govindam Mudhamate. This is most practical thing. All of us have to look forward to it. Keep remembering. That's what Sri Ramakrishna always used to say. Death has surrounded you with all its weapons. Every passing day, this death is approaching you nearer and nearer. Remember this and don't weep for that. Do go on doing what best you can do. It brings marvelous truths. And once Swami Vivekananda gave sannyasa to some disciples and they requested him to give a short talk on sannyasa, and then he defined there. He said sannyasa is a love of death. Sannyasa is a love of death. Perhaps on some other occasion somebody asked, think constantly thinking about death, is it not going to depress a person, make him very downhearted? Swami Vivekananda said, yes, for a few days, and then the man will changa ho jayega. The man will get up and say, what the hell? If I am going to die, I am going to die. So either let me enjoy this world like a hero, or let me put all my efforts in making spiritual progress. So first few days, it remains a negative thought. Thereafterwards, it is the greatest impetus which lends tremendous strength for whatever endeavor we are going to do. This great Vedantic truth is equally applicable whether he is a Hindu, Christian, 1 billion years back, 1 billion years hence. So one who having obtained this rare human birth doesn't strive for spiritual progress, indeed such a person lives in vain. So following the instructions of his guru Govindacharya, and remember Govindacharya is the disciple of Gaudapadacharya, who has written marvelous commentaries in the form of verses called Karikas, 215 Karikas to this Mandukya Upanishad, which is the shortest Upanishad containing only 12 mantras. So Shankaracharya writes beautiful commentary on Gaudapada, his great guru, guru's guru, and Bhashyam on the Mandukya Upanishad, on the Karikas of Gaudapada is a marvelous thing. So Shankaracharya made his way to Kashi and stayed there for some years. Kashi, Varanasi, is called Banaras. That is a horrible name. Varanasi is a most beautiful word, Kashi of course. Kashi is considered not only at the holiest of places in India, it is also at that time a seat of learning and scholarship. Anyone who wishes to become known as a great scholar must make his way to Kashi and debate with the local pandits, and if they certify you are a great man, then his name and fame will spread. So Shankaracharya came to Varanasi, lived for some years in Kashi. How did he spend his time? He spent his time in meditation and teaching of the scriptures. Interpreting scriptures like the Upanishads and Bhagavad Gita, etc., he boldly propounded the profound doctrines of non-duality. Brahman, the all, the infinite, the unborn, the eternal, is the only reality. This world is a passing show, it is unreal. The individual soul is none other than Brahman. By the realization of Brahman alone, can one really become liberated? There is no other way. His listeners, consisting of both the learned and simple devotees, were charmed and stirred to their depths by the power and eloquence of the young ascetic Shankaracharya. Some of them wished to pursue the Vedantic studies seriously and became his disciples and stayed with him. Now, people have come to know about Shankaracharya because, like a lotus which blooms, need not send any formal invitation. As soon as the lotus blooms, Ramakrishna used to say, bees come of themselves. But it is a statement of profound significance. Bees means earnest learners. Those who want God, they will make their way. If there is a famous scientist, those who want to become scientists, aspiring to be scientists, they will make, inevitably there is a unwritten law. Likes come together. So here also, some disciples who were in search of God, and of course who has the making of that kind of mentality suitable for the instruction of Advaita Vedanta view. So they came to him from different places, and one such person is the story of Padmapada. So the story of Padmapada. Pada means feet. Padma means lotus feet. Lotus feet. So the story goes, one among them was a young man named Sadananda. He was from South India. His devotion to his teacher was unparalleled. In later years only, he acquired this nickname, Padmapada. The story of Padmapada is a telling lesson in Guru Bhakti, devotion to one's Guru. Everything can be achieved by devotion to the Guru. Remember, Swami Brahmananji used to say, through the grace of the Guru, not only can the Kundalini be roused, but everything else can be had, even the knowledge of Brahman. But Swami Brahmananji adds, this grace cannot be attained easily. One has to strive one's utmost to get it. In this connection, we can perhaps recall the story of Swami Adbhutanandaji, which we will be dealing in our next class. Om Jananim Sharadam Devim Ramakrishnam Jagadgurum Padapadme Tayo Sritva Pranamami Muhur Muhu. May Ramakrishna, Holy Mother and Swami Vivekananda bless us all with Bhakti. Jai Ramakrishna.